Hey, we want to thank everybody for listening, joining us for Sober October. And we want to thank all of our guests being so brave and kind to get on here and share their stories.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're addiction stories, right? So, I mean, and Tony, I've really never asked our listeners, but you know, we're gonna plead with you to share this podcast with you know anyone really, because you know you never know who needs to hear these stories. We've also left a couple web links in our podcast descriptions. It's just a couple organizations that can help with addiction. Hey, welcome to your day off. My name is Corey, and of course, I'm with my bud, Tony. What's up, Tony?
Hey, buddy, what's up, man? We're still in the month of October here for Sober October. Yeah. And, you know, our guest today is someone who, she said that she didn't really speak openly out about her recovery. And so we're looking forward to, her story reaching out and touching somebody's soul and spirit that just needs to hear what she has to say.
Absolutely. I mean, and even just to kind of, I want to talk a little bit about Sober October and what we're up to. And, I don't know if our industry's ever really addressed it. You know, I don't know if I've ever heard it or anything. And I just want to encourage people that, when they listen to these podcasts, if they can just share it with anybody, because you just never know who might need to hear it. And, you know, I don't necessarily know if this month is for our entire industry, but I'm sure it's for the one or two people that need to hear it. So, you know, again, if you're listening and you kind of dig what we're up to or you kind of think it can make a difference, you know, certainly share this month with people.
Absolutely. Well, another great podcast about to come up, and let's jump into it.
Yeah. Okay, so today our guest is Amber O'Hare, and she's the co-founder of the business of Balayage. I'm sure they're huge, so I'm sure you guys have heard about it. So, let's just get in. Miss Amber O'Hare, welcome to your day off.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here with you guys and talk about something that's very dear to me and very, very special. So thank you for inviting me.
We should be thanking you because, you know, this is...
Yeah, it's a tough subject for a lot of people to talk about, especially when it's about themselves, right?
Yeah.
So, but before we get into that story, give us a quick run through of who you are, where you grew up, and how you found this great industry.
Okay, cool. So I grew up in Southern California. I grew up actually in the industry. I have a lot of cousins and aunts and uncles that have owned salons, been famous colorists, owned beauty schools. So when I was about 16 and I had been to four different high schools and I knew that school was not for me, I talked my mom into letting me go to beauty school and got my proficiency, which is the equivalency to the GED when you're under 18 out here in California, and went straight to beauty school.
So after beauty school, what did you end up in a salon, like right away, or what that look like?
Yeah, I went to beauty school in Pasadena, and I wound up, while I was in beauty school, working at a salon in Hollywood. First Beverly Hills and then Hollywood. I assisted there for about a year and a half. I quickly realized that wasn't the scene for me. I obviously liked the partying aspect of it, but I knew that I wanted to build a clientele that was a little more stable and get out of kind of that celebrity scene. My boss did a lot of that. So I assisted there for about a year and a half and then moved to Orange County and started to build my clientele.
So you're still in Orange County now?
So I do own a salon in Orange County, but I live in Los Angeles, so I commute. So I'm kind of all over.
What's the name of your salon in Orange County?
My salon is Golden Bridge Salon.
Oh, nice. Golden Bridge, you said? Yeah. Bridge?
Golden Braid.
Oh,
like
Golden
a hair braid.
Silly.
Yeah. So I bought it about a year ago with my salon partner, and the name already existed. We bought it from an owner who was just unable to carry on the salon, but she loved it. So we felt like as a tribute to her, we would keep the name out of respect for what she had built and what she had done. It's been awesome. She still works there. She's amazing. really, really grateful for her. She's walked us through a lot of stuff. So, yeah.
It's nice to have, right? You know, like someone you can talk to, talk through things, you know, that's amazing.
Totally.
How long have you, how many years do you have in behind the chair?
Behind the chair, I have been, almost 21 years.
Good work.
Behind the chair. Yeah.
And two
so it started kids, with, right? Yeah, two kids. I have, married. I have a husband. We will celebrate our 10 year anniversary next month. And two kids. My son is 6. His name's Cash. And my daughter is 3. Her name is Parker.
Oh, we can talk about the name Cash, but that's gonna take us way off topic. All right. So
Corey has a big tattoo of Johnny Cash. Big
fan. Oh, there you go. We love Johnny Cash.
So, I mean, you know, here we are in Sober October. We kind of, we know why you're here or why you're doing like a podcast. Like, where does that part of your story, where does that begin?
So, it's interesting. This was really good timing, too, because I just celebrated my 16th sober birthday on September 8th.
Congrats.
I got sober 2 weeks after my 21st birthday, which I just thought was unbearable, but here I am 16 years later. And for me, you know, I think kind of growing up in an alcoholic family where my family was just kind of riddled with the disease. There's not really anybody in my family, immediate family, that I could say has not had substance abuse or alcohol issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, and growing up, I told myself I would never do like them, and then I quickly saw as life became a little bit more and more unbearable as far as, you know, trying to work, just the basic functions of life were really difficult for me, and so I used alcohol regularly to get through that stuff. So that's kind of when I started to realize there was a problem.
So what kind of problems when did you kind of feel like you were losing control, or what did that look like?
So I never really had control. I do like to be really clear about that. I know a lot of people talk about in their drinking that they had a lot of good times. I really didn't. Drinking for me was really a way to survive and function. I was pretty much always, from my very first drink, a blackout drinker. And would get myself in these very uncomfortable, dangerous situations. So for me, I definitely had that underlying sense that there was a problem. Alcoholism was talked about in my family very openly, that like I was reminded that my grandparents were alcoholics, and I actually was raised in a 12-step program because my dad and stepmom were sober. So it was always something that was in the back of my head, but I was still trying to convince everybody else that I was fine, that I could drink normally. And
this wasn't going to happen to me, right?
So were you trying to hide it? Were you trying to hide that portion of your life?
No.
People around you?
No. Luckily for me, my family is so dysfunctional that there wasn't really much necessity for me to hide it. There was always somebody more dysfunctional than me, so I got to kind of, like, be in the background.
She got a pass.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I got a pass. I was the least worst of the alcoholics. But I did, the people that weren't in my family definitely noticed it. That boss that I talked about when I was 16, my first salon job, was sober. And she did see the signs of my drinking at a very, you know, early stage.
Oh, so you're 16.
I did start drinking. I was about 12 when I started drinking.
Wow.
Yeah. So
even at 12, it was blackout.
So definitely drank to excess from the very beginning.
So even your first boss, who you said was sober, did she try to help you along or call you out, or did she make it aware?
She did. You
need to be careful.
She did, actually. She was really, really supportive. And I've since, you know, she's asked me to speak at meetings that she's the secretary of, and we have a very good relationship. But at the time, yeah, she actually paid me, she paid for me to go to therapy with this sober alcoholic in the area who was a very well-known drug and alcohol counselor. And the contract was that I wasn't allowed to do any like substance as long as I didn't do that. Well, obviously I couldn't do that, so I got kicked out of therapy.
There was more than just alcohol then? Were there other substances that you were using?
There were other substances, yeah.
And so the salon owner that paid for the therapy, did obviously she cared a lot about you. What was her reaction to you being kicked out?
I think, you know, she was very loving, and she definitely understood that I was young and that I had not hit a bottom and I wasn't ready for help. So she never shamed me or, you know, guilted me or anything like that. She just kind of let it go.
Wow. That's like, yeah. You know, I don't even know what to say about that.
Yeah.
So. I guess at that point you see somebody and I guess she's been there, done that. And she knows that mm-hmm. not willing to take it seriously now, she's going to have to maybe hit rock bottom or maybe hit her where she, that wall that's going to wake her up to realize that she needs it.
Right.
Definitely.
What was your bottom, or how long did that take, or?
Yeah, so my bottom was nothing like magnificent. I just mm-hmm. had one more night of drinking and another blackout, and came to in the morning and just really had that emotional and spiritual bottom. And there's, you know, there's something that like my recovery friends talk about and we read about, and it's that jumping off place where you can find, or you're going to find yourself in a position where you can't live with or without alcohol. And I had hit that place, and we were going to brunch in the morning and everybody was just ordering breakfast, and I couldn't imagine not ordering a drink, and I couldn't imagine drinking. So I definitely hit that jumping off place.
I just had an incredible experience this weekend. My daughter just got married.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. But I remember her being at college and my fear of her partying and passing out. Cause you hear so many nightmare stories of, you know, especially young girls, being taken advantage or whatever, you know what I mean? When they pass out, or, you know what I mean? Cause, it was such a scary thing for a father to think about, or to, you know what I mean? Just every night. Yeah. But when you hear these stories about young girls passing out, you know what I mean? It's so scary for a father, right? And
it's definitely another,
just another element. And thank God that you were able to, you know, say, you know what, this is my last time I'm going to pass out, because, you know, you said yourself that you put yourself in so many dangerous situations because, you have no control. You have no idea what's happening to you until the next day.
Yeah. It's pretty brutal. And I just remember, I mean, I would wake up with bruises all over my arms from people holding me up. I had slipped and chipped a bone in my leg and came to with like a tennis ball size, you know, injury on my shin. And, you know, so many things like that, that I tried to laugh it off with my friends. Oh, wasn't that funny? What did we do last night? And then, you know, it was like trying to piece the stuff together, but make it like a really funny thing, like that it was very funny that I had blacked out. And then it got harder and harder to make light of what was going on.
Right. So at that brunch, it was kind of your, you know, I guess awakening, we can call it, or you said the jump off point.
Yeah. It was definitely the jumping off point. And I had a friend that was sober. I actually had quite a few friends that had gotten sober very young, and I just thought that was dreadful. I couldn't even believe that they would do that. And I called this one in particular and told him I needed help, and he gave me some direction on what to do and where to go. And luckily, I felt like I was blessed with that gift of desperation and willingness. I was desperate enough to be willing to do what was suggested to try and live a different life.
Did it ever affect your job? Did it ever affect, you know, you going to work and your clientele?
Oh my gosh. Yes. I'm so glad you guys asked about that. So I had, it definitely affected my job. I was fired from my favorite job ever. This was as a stylist. And he basically just told me he couldn't do it anymore. My behavior was erratic. I would do things like leave for the day and leave the back door wide open. I put the salon at risk in a lot of different ways. And he fired me, and I just remember packing my stuff and just sobbing. I just, you know, I knew that this was like more of just me losing my job. It was losing some dignity, losing some self-respect, and kind of spiraling down to my bottom. So I went and worked at a salon that the owner likes to drink like me. And that way, you know, I wasn't accountable for my actions or my behavior, because I drank like the owner did. So it was no big deal.
Right. Obviously, you had somebody in your life now that encouraged it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Subconsciously, she probably was looking for that too, right?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So then let's back up. Was it, so your friend, was it a 12-step program that they kind of recommended, or was it like a spiritual kind of thing?
Yeah.
Like where did you end up?
Yeah, it was a 12-step program, and I'm still active in that 12-step program, but yeah, that's where I wound up. He unfortunately is not sober anymore. But I, you know, text him every year on my birthday and thank him for directing me to where I needed to be and showing me what I needed for my life. I definitely don't think that a 12-step program corners the market on sobriety. I believe there's so many different ways you can get sober. I unfortunately had tried a lot of those different ways. I had tried like the church route. I had tried the spiritual you know, meditation route. I had tried a few different things. And I think, unfortunately, given how far I had gone in my bottom, for me, it took a 12-step program. And now I continue because I don't want to, you know, get mine and then leave. So I stay for the people that are coming in like me so that I can share my story and hopefully be a light to them.
That's beautiful.
That is beautiful, isn't it?
Yep.
Wow.
We'll get into the successes of that. I want to talk more about that, but I'm going to go a little bit back into your bottom. When you decided, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore, were you still at that salon where the owner liked to party as much as you did, like to drink? Or did you already move on from that? Oh, you were.
I was at that salon a couple weeks before I got sober. I did call her from the bar when I was drinking because somebody told me that I was going to get fired. So I did call her drunk and said, what do you think are you doing? You think you're going to fire me? La, 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 la. You know, on and on. So I was definitely on thin ice. I was a fan of drinking on the job. I would start a highlight. I'd get halfway through. I'd go sit in the back, have a couple drinks, come back out, finish it.
Wow.
So I definitely drank during the day and on the job. We served alcohol, and it's just, I just thought it was there for me. So that's what I did. And
so she was going to follow you because you drank more than she did, or you partied harder than she did? I mean,
I don't know. I don't even remember, to be honest. And I mean, it could have been like totally untrue, but in my like drunken, you know, super, somebody at this local bar told me that, and so I took it to be true. And I mean, it was like midnight. I'm calling my boss to yell at her because I hear I'm getting fired. Like, just the insanity is so funny. Now
well, that you made it, I think that's a wonderful, right? So what? So were you a belligerent drunk, or were you the party girl, or what did that look like for you?
She was blackout.
She was the blackout.
Yeah, I was just blackout. I was most happy when I was drinking. I was incredibly uncomfortable between drinks. I wasn't like belligerent and fighting and crazy. I just wanted to drink, and my goal was to check out. So if I did blackout, I wasn't like afraid of it.
Wow.
Until the next morning.
Until you had to start answering questions, right? Or asking questions
at that point. Yeah, either one. Yeah.
So did you ever, the first boss that fired you, did you ever make amends?
Well, this is probably my favorite story in my sobriety. I did have a chance to make amends. I was going through the steps. I did work on my amends step, which is to try and repair the damage I had done from my drinking. And I was working out, and I saw that old boss walk in front of me on the treadmill, and I thought, oh yeah, I owe him an amends. But you know what? I'm not going to do that. I don't feel like doing it. I don't want to do that. And seconds later, someone tapped me on the shoulder, and it was a friend from my 12-step program, and just said, hey, what's going on? And I just felt like, okay, you know what? If that's not a sign, I don't know what is. So I told, you know, this friend, oh, I just saw my old boss, and I owe him an amends, but I don't want to do it. You know, too uncomfortable. And he just said, well, what better time than now? So I went and followed him outside of the gym, and I made that amends, and I was direct and, you know, told him that my drinking got in the way of, you know, how much respect I had for him and his business, and I cared about him, and I was very grateful for the opportunities, and he welcomed it. He was really incredible. And then about 6 months later, when I was getting ready to leave my job that I stayed at for the first 6 months of my sobriety, where that boss was drinking and that behavior was acceptable, I called him and said, hey, I'm looking for a place. You know, I don't know if you would ever take me back, but, you know, I am still sober and this is why I'm leaving and blah, blah, blah. So he took me back and I was there for 12 years.
That's an incredible, incredible story. Wow.
Yeah.
Like that. Both sides.
Very grateful.
Both sides. You know what I mean? Like he had to swallow a lot too, right? Yeah. Like he had to.
Yeah,
that's, you know, that's a big risk. That's a big gamble on his part, right?
Mm-hmm. Did you say he was sober?
You know what? He wasn't sober, but his best friend and his best friend's wife are, and are drug and alcohol counselors, and have become very, respected friends of mine. So he did definitely understand the disease and that there was recovery from it.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's almost as if he was put on your life on purpose, right? It was almost like he was putting your life to fire you, and then, you know, also putting your life to open his arms wide for you again.
Yeah.
It's pretty
amazing. And I do like to say that was kind of, you know, being there for 12 years was like my get sober job. It's like all, you know, my friends know there that I'm sober. They had seen me before. They had seen me drinking. They had seen me sober. They're very supportive of me, and I was able just to, you know, work there and kind of change my life completely from the person I was. And then when it was time for me to move on, I got to do that with, you know, dignity and respect for him and respect for the salon and all my friends there. So it was very cool.
You know, you brought something up that we haven't talked about this month, but I certainly, if you have, you know, opinion about it, but it's amazing how, and I think a lot of times before people get sober is that they're scared of how people are going to react to them. And it's amazing how powerful, once somebody takes that stand, how the entire community, and not just the sober community, but how like everybody is kind of respects that and wishes you well through that, even if they're not sober themselves. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, I definitely have. You know, I talked to you guys about how I don't openly, it's not like a day-to-day conversation for me, my sobriety. It's more, you know, I'll definitely put it out there when I have a sober anniversary. Obviously, I'm active in a 12-step program, so my sober friends obviously know that I'm sober. But if not, you know, when I'm behind the chair, my topic of discussion is not sobriety because it's not about me. It's about my clients. But when it does come up, I do get a lot of support because I really feel like, you know, it's the words interchangeable, like alcohol, drugs, food, relationships, money, depression, anxiety. Like everybody I know has some type of struggle. And I just, it's a little bit of that acknowledgement of like, I get it. I see you. I know life is hard. I know you're struggling with this, and I know that there's a way out, and I hope that you find it. So for me, I do feel like I get a lot of support.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. And obviously when you went back to that salon for 12 years, I mean, you know what I mean? Having the connections that he had, I mean, you were surrounded by support the whole time, which is great. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Let's, I'll tell you, like, I don't want to say it was, well, just something that we've, that I've encountered. And again, I haven't drank since 99, but I certainly know, like, over like at Christmas time and stuff, when your clients are bringing in gifts and, you know, for many years, and even to this day, you know, I still get bottles of champagne or bottles of stuff. Yeah. Have you encountered that?
I get it often, and I just think it's so funny. So I just say thank you so much. That's so thoughtful, and then I give it to somebody else.
Right.
but what's so funny is then. So, like, the last few years, I will post that, like, it's my sober anniversary on my social media pages or whatever. And I think of the clients that follow me that bring me this. I wonder if they're reading this, if they're kicking themselves. it's pretty funny.
That is pretty. I never even thought about that. But
yeah.
I certainly know it's something that I've encountered, and you know, for years, you know, it was like I was the best person to invite for Christmas because I always had a bunch of booze to bring that I wasn't going to.
Let's go back to the back to the 12th step that you're staying with to be that light to others that are coming in. I mean, that's to me, that's, you know, you're, it's not about you anymore; it's about other people, and that's one of the things that I think attracts Corey and I to a lot of people in our industry is that, you know, we talk to a lot of people and a lot of people who are doing things to help the industry or help other people
to support it. Right.
Yeah. And, but you know, and that doesn't have to do with our industry, but that has to do with you. I mean, you care enough about other people to stay there to make sure that, you know, you can be that light for them. That's pretty incredible. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. I mean, as far as, you know, just being there for other people, I just go to my meetings regularly and just basically welcoming to women that come in that are going through the same problems and feel like that there's not a way out. Mm-hmm. And at this point in my life, because I have small kids, I can't do as much as I used to. But for the first 7 years I was sober, I volunteered at a non-medical detox every week.
Wow.
That was super powerful and just such a reminder of how lucky I am to be sober and to not be in the grips of that way of living and way of thinking. And now with kids and husbands and businesses and all this stuff, it's a little harder for me to volunteer in that capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's just being in the meetings, sharing my experience, strength and hope, and you know, just hoping that I can be an example for somebody else or just give them that little. I just remember being new and feeling so afraid and so hopeless, and somebody would share that they have improved, that their life has gotten better, and it was just that little bit of hope that kept me going, that okay, maybe that could be me too. So for me at this point in my life, with everything being so busy, that's what I do. I just go to my meetings, I share my story, and hope that I can be there for somebody else.
Have you seen a young Amber in your salon?
That's such a good question. Not in my salon. I've definitely a few years traveling and teaching thousands of hairdressers. So I've experienced it in class. I had an unfortunate situation a couple years ago where a student showed up and was visibly intoxicated and high.
Mm-hmm.
And then later disputed the charges on her credit card because she said that she wasn't there. Mm. And then fast forward a year later, she came to another one of my classes, which was at a big summit that I was teaching at, and tried to act like she hadn't met me before. And so I was just really, I mean, I don't care about the money, the ticket, the whatever. It's like, my concern is for her. She's clearly struggling. And then months later, she came and got her hair done at my salon. So it's this interesting kind of, like, I feel like our paths have crossed for a reason. And so every time I see her, I just try to use it as an opportunity to be loving and open and just kind of open that conversation.
About your own sobriety? Is that the conversation you opened with?
Not even about sobriety, just about, I mean, I asked her about where she's working. She's, you know, a student. So, she's a recent graduate. So I asked her about where she's working, what's going on in her life, just kind of open up a conversation in general. For me, I don't come right out the gate and say, oh yeah, I'm sober. I struggled with that too. I'm like, let's build a connection first. And then maybe when you're struggling, you'll reach out.
Yeah.
Plant seeds.
Yeah. Planting seeds. Or, I mean, I'm kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe this is the one person in your life that has to hear that, though.
Well, you know, that's true. There's definitely that. But it's been an interesting thing to watch. So, but as far as my salon, I have a lot of like established stylists that are married or, you know, settled with kids, and they're just busy, hardworking stylists. There's not a lot of partying. It's a very like driven kind of culture we have, which is awesome.
That's cool. Do you guys serve alcohol at the salon?
We don't. I'm not opposed to it, but I'm also not 100% on board. So there's a couple stylists that wanted us to do it, and then we actually checked with the city, and we would have to carry a special permit, which is thousands of dollars, and we were just like, we're not willing to do that. If it were an easy thing and we just had, you know, some beer and wine there, I'm totally fine. I have no problem with anybody else drinking. I have a problem with me drinking. So, no, I'm good. I'm good with it.
Is your husband sober, or does he drink?
My husband's sober. He has been sober for a couple months than me, but a little over 16 years.
Oh, awesome. Did you guys meet in the program?
Yeah. We did. I don't share this story very often, but we did. He went through treatment with my dad, and they became very good friends, and he started working for my dad's company and for years. And then my dad kept trying to set me up with him, and I was like, no, that's weird. That's your friend. What are you doing? He's obviously a lot younger than my dad. He's only a few years older than me. And then finally, one time, he's like, you should really go out with him. And so I'm like, okay, fine. And I'll give him my number. And then that was it.
Rest is history, you know? Yep. That which we resist.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Exactly. No, and I'm so lucky. He's amazing and supportive of everything that I do and supportive of my career and, you know, all the things that I feel like can pile up and become so overwhelming. And he constantly encourages me to like push forward. And
that's amazing. Very cool. Yeah. So tell us, I mean, you've got the husband, you've got the kid. What other like amazing things have happened, you know, post sobriety or post clarity? Post clarity, we'll call it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I regularly feel like I'm living a life that I'm only able to live because of, you know, that intervention that I had with, you know, that last night of drinking and being able to get sober. And I mean, I just feel like everything I do is amazing because I just feel it's such a gift. Like just working and having a clientele, I feel is so amazing. Like those, all of the little things were such a struggle for me. Just my car was being repossessed before I got sober. I was getting evicted from my apartment. Paying bills was difficult. I didn't have a penny saved. Like, so all of those little things to me are, I feel like, such a miracle. The fact that, like, I have a savings account because I'm not spending recklessly, and I pay my bills on time, and I have health insurance. Like, for me, it's all that little stuff that I just feel like is such a miracle. As far as like the bigger stuff, I definitely feel like having the opportunity to be the brainchild behind the business of Balayage was for me a huge divine creation. It was, the idea came from, I was pregnant with my second child. I dropped my first son off at daycare. I went to a coffee shop and did like some meditation and did some writing, and was kind of looking for what I felt like my next step should be. I had a full clientele behind the chair. I loved it, but I wanted a little bit more. So I started to do some writing, and next thing I know, I developed a balayage curriculum. And because I was pregnant and I was watching The Business of Being Born a lot, I'm like, oh, The Business of Balayage. Perfect. And I really felt like that was such a God-inspired thing, because it was, I wanted to really take what I did in my service work in my 12-step program and like bring it to the industry and show people how to do the technique, but not only how to do the technique, incorporate it into their day-to-day business. Show them how to thrive behind the chair. Show them how to like tap into that creativity that a lot of us got into this industry for, but then lost it along the way because we're so busy and our clients are double booking and blah, blah, blah. So for that, I mean, that business for me was a very God-inspired idea. And every move I made, it was like through prayer and meditation and like how I was supposed to take this business to the next step to be of maximum service to those around me. So it was really cool.
That's amazing. Actually, you mentioned a couple of times, like through prayer meditation, are those your kind of like go-tos, or is that your spiritual journey, your spiritual side to it?
Yeah. So I definitely, have a regular prayer and meditation practice, which apparently I need to improve upon, because my mother-in-law just gave me these meditation beads for my birthday. Said, you really should start meditating again. And I said, I do meditate, but clearly I need to meditate more. But yeah, prayer for me is like water. It's the first thing I do when I wake up. I ask my higher power to keep me sober, direct my thinking for the day. I try to remember in the midst of the chaos of children to like ask for patience and guidance. This morning was not such a good example for that. I wanted to run away for like 5 years. come back when they're like 10 and we can have a little fun. But yeah, definitely prayer and meditation is the way I kind of maintain my spiritual development.
Is that like, you've mentioned like, you know, your gratitude as well. Is that the moment when you reflect on that as well?
You know, I should do that more. I don't have like a regular gratitude practice. I do have those moments of deep gratitude. When I was drinking, I would just look around and I would just think, holy shit, is this my life? Like, holy shit, how is this it? How can I not function? How is everything so difficult? And then now for me, my moments of deep gratitude are, holy shit, is this my life? This is so amazing. So I don't have a regular, like, write out a gratitude practice. I do it periodically, but it's more tapping into, like, that sense of deep gratitude I have for the life that I'm able to live.
We haven't, like, I've seen people do it, and we haven't talked too much about it, but and maybe you can help me out, but somebody posted on Instagram, like we're all on the same Instagram, but somebody posted on Instagram about how they do like a gratitude diary, and just throughout the day, they just write down, you know, what they're thankful for or where they're going to show great gratitude.
Yeah, I love that. For me, if I'm doing that,
I love the idea. I just can't do it. Yeah. I haven't done it, you know?
Yeah. I have to get into like a severe amount of pain for me to do that kind of work. So I have to be pretty, you know, depressed or desperate to do a gratitude list like that. But, you know, I have done it and it works very well. And then life goes on and you feel good and you forget about it. And
But necessarily like those kind of things, like even with your spiritual practice or even with the gratitude and stuff, you know, I don't necessarily think that it's a solution to life, but I think what it is it gives us something to hold on to. So when we are feeling low or something, it gives us something to grasp onto, you know, like, oh, I've done this. I know how to get through this. And it just gives you like one more thing.
Yeah. Just kind of building that muscle and that little, because, you know, I mean, let's be real, life is hard. There's stuff that comes at us that is pretty unbearable. And it's so having that little bit of like buffer to kind of soften the blow of life is always a good thing.
Right, exactly. And I live in mantras, you know. I have a mantra for everything. Totally in my head. That's like, awesome. like if someone cuts me off in traffic, like I have a mantra, you know, or if I hold the door open to somebody and they don't say thank you, you know, I have a mantra for that. Like, you know, I always have this head game in my head. Okay, that's not why I opened the door. I didn't open the door for a thank you. I opened the door just to be a good, like, citizen of the world, you know? So it just kind of lets all that, like, that little stress go away. It's like, I believe in keeping my barrel empty, and I know, like, you know, somebody else not saying thank you shouldn't be in my barrel, but, you know, if I own it, it will be.
Yeah, try to have the spirit of being not offended. You know what I mean? Too many people are easily offended.
Well, we all are. You know, it's not even too many people. We can't even all
say just try to have that spirit not to be offended so you don't react.
That's it. Keep your barrel empty, bro. Keep your barrel empty.
Yeah. Yep. No, that's true. I like that.
So if you could give one advice to someone who is struggling with this, what would it be?
So, I think my biggest is just to get honest with someone about how you're feeling and what your struggle is. I know when I opened up and got honest about what was going on and what I was really afraid of and what I was doing, my behavior, that was when my life started to change. And then I've just continued to have those people in my life that I can be honest with, you know, the stuff that nobody talks about. Like, I have people in my life that I can talk to about that stuff, the fears, the anxiety, the stresses, the reactions to life, the, you know, the things that we react to and the ways that we behave that we aren't so proud of, the stuff that we all do. But I think a lot of us feel shame and regret and we stuff it and we don't talk about it. So my biggest piece of advice is just to be honest and talk to somebody about what's going on.
Do those same people that you talk to, do they also have permission to call you out on your bullshit?
Yeah. Yeah, my husband being number one, he does not let me get away with anything.
And do you respect that enough to where it doesn't create, like, you know, marital strife, I guess, you know? It's kind of hard to, like, remove the, you know, you have to just respect that. Okay, yeah. Coming from a good place, not like, whatever.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's definitely been a dance, you know, the last 12 years that we've been together, of like how he approaches things and how I approach things. And my biggest communication tool in my relationship with him, or, you know, my sober friends or my work friends or any of my friends that I go on a deeper level with, is it's a very simple question, and it's, do you want feedback on that? And they know that if they say yes, they're 100% getting honest feedback. And then I know in the same respect, if I say yes, that I want feedback on that, I'm 100% getting feedback. Because there's sometimes where I don't want the feedback. Sometimes I don't want to be called out. I just want to vent and I need to kind of process. Like, I don't feel like I always need someone to call me out on my bullshit, right? Because, like, I'm going to get there. Mm-hmm. Like, I've done this kind of same pattern enough to look at, dig deep, look at my part, look at where I can change, look at all these things, to where it becomes less productive if someone's like, you did this and you did that and you did this. It's more productive if people are like, hey, do you want some feedback? You know, this is what I see from an outside perspective. Does that make sense?
It completely makes sense. And, like, I mean, I usually set that up with, like, do you want me to be honest, or do you want to hear the truth?
Yeah.
But I love yours, because yours is so much less aggressive than, like, do you want me to be honest? You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
I'm totally stealing this, because I've been searching for this. I've been searching for this sentence. So I love this. It's okay. It's okay if you say no. You know what I mean?
And, like, it's okay. I've heard no a lot. I'm very direct. I'm super honest. And so the people around me know that if they want my feedback, they're going to get it. And so no is great. I'm fine. I can totally accept that. I'm not the end all be all. I don't think my feedback is going to change your life or change the way you think about things. So if you're not available for it or ready for it at that time, like, I totally get it.
I love that. That's really, really great. And by setting that up, you're also, you know, your feedback is going to be constructive, or it's going to be from love. It's not going to be judgmental, you know?
Yeah.
So yes.
I love that sentence. That's amazing.
Cool. Well, I got a little nugget from you too, so thank you. The mantras, I like that.
Oh, the mantras, you like that? We'll talk more about that off air. But
yeah.
Dude, just thank you, man. Thank you for giving us your time and
your story.
Yeah, your story, no doubt. I mean, thank you very much. We're just we're humbled, and again, like we said in the opening, hopefully these conversations, you know, well, these conversations definitely aren't for everybody, but hopefully they're for somebody, and we hope that that somebody can get something out of this. So, again, Miss Amber O'Hare, thank you very, very much for joining us on your day off.
Guys. Please do me
you. Hey, so there it is. Hey, this is a message that we've been trying to bring, I don't know, for the last couple of months, actually since we started the podcast. Hey, so if you like the podcast or if you find that it's useful, please, please, please leave us a review, a 5-star review on iTunes. Leave us a rating and a review.
But if you don't like it, forget about it.
Yeah, totally forget about this message. We also want to thank Sarah and Blaine from Pretty Gritty. Sarah and Blaine, they are a band out of Portland, Oregon, and we just want to thank them very much for allowing us to use their song, Pleased to Meet You, on our podcast. That's cool. I think you can find their music on iTunes.
Peace and hair grease.